This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
How do you get around the Kansas City region if you can't drive or use a regular bus? Why can't the disabled population in Kansas City use a special edition bus in Johnson County? How are we going to cope with the rapidly growing need for special transportation as the baby boomers age? Special transportation is the topic of today's Transit Talk.
I'm Janet Rogers of Transit Action Network, and I'm joined by public policy specialist Sheila Staron of The Whole Person and Jameson Auten, who has just been promoted to KCATA Vice President of Regional Service Delivery. He continues to be in charge of ADA compliance for KCATA and the head of Sheriff Fair Program and KCATA Customer Relations. Welcome to the show.
Jameson, just what is special transportation, or what we often call paratransit, and how does it work in the Kansas City region?
Special transportation is transportation that's designed for people who, because of their disability, may not be able to access the fixed route bus system, the bus that runs up and down the street. So we have a transportation system that will pick people up at their homes and take them to their destination.
How does that work around here? I mean, there are, for instance, ADA compliant. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. It gets confusing. There's what we call ADA compliant complementary paratransit, which is based on the Americans with Disabilities Act. And what that does is it makes it law that wherever you have a local bus running up and down the street, you need to provide transportation that everyone can use. So this transportation is designed for folks who may not be able to use that bus, whether it's because the bus doesn't kneel or there isn't a curb cut. It allows people to access public transportation.
And aren't there fairly strict eligibility rules to get access to that transportation?
Yeah, the ADA does outline eligibility requirements, and the real question in looking at an individual is it needs to be an individual-based decision, and it needs to take into consideration how that person's disability impacts their ability to use the bus system. So that's what needs to be looked at, is how that individual person can or cannot use the bus.
There's, four different transit agencies here in town. They all have some kind of special transportation, but it's all not the same, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. You do Kansas City, you can take your pick. You have a service in Wyandotte County, you have Kansas City, ATA. You have Independence with Indy Access, and you also have a system out of Johnson County. Now, all three except Johnson County do the ADA paratransit, and Johnson County has paratransit service or special transportation services, but it's not under the ADA guidelines.
Okay, can you explain the difference then?
Sure. The ADA is required when you have what's called local bus service. So these are the buses that run up and down Main Street or run up and down Troost. The buses that are called commuter express, that are more commuter-driven from limited stops to downtown, park-and-ride type routes, those are not required to provide ADA paratransit services. So what some localities have done is they've put in some kind of special transportation system, but it doesn't necessarily need to follow the guidelines of the ADA.
So is that what you're calling non-ADA transportation?
Correct. That's non-ADA transportation. So under ADA transportation, there are certain times when the service needs to be available, certain areas, all based on the fixed route system, even the fare. The fare can be no more than two times the amount of what it is on the bus. So for KCATA service area, it costs you $1.50 to get on the bus. So the fare on our paratransit system can be no more than $3. But when you move to non-ADA service, that requirement for the fare is not there. So localities can make local decisions on what the fare is going to be, when the service is going to run, where the service goes, and who rides the service based on their eligibility requirements.
So when you say it depends on when the buses run, so if you're in a place like Independence, if a bus doesn't run on Sunday, then there's no paratransit service.
Right. Under ADA, now you can go beyond ADA and you can provide that paratransit service. But under ADA, if that bus is not running on Sunday, then the paratransit service doesn't have to run on Sunday. And it goes one step further. If you have a bus route that simply does not run and the rest of the system is running on that one corridor, within 3/4 mile of that route, ADA paratransit isn't required. So it really goes route by route.
Okay, and that 3/4 mile, what's that?
Okay, so the ADA requires that you provide paratransit service within a 3/4 mile circumference of a bus route. What it doesn't allow is the different spaghetti lines of bus routes. Say there's an island in the middle where it's surrounded by paratransit eligible area, but there isn't paratransit there. It doesn't allow you to say you can't go to that island. You have to cover the whole area. Under ADA, it has that 3/4 mile, so you know you're guaranteed that. Under non-ADA, that guarantee's not there.
Okay, Sheila, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about why this ADA complementary service even exists.
Well, back in 1990, when the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law, there was an effort made to include transportation, because one of the hugest barriers faced by people with disabilities is transportation. And transportation can be an incredible barrier to employment, to housing, to doctor's appointments. There are all kinds of people with all manner of disabilities. I work at the Whole Person, which is a independent living center that serves people with all kinds of disabilities. And one overarching common denominator amongst many disabilities is the barrier that transportation creates. So it was really important to the founders of the Americans with Disabilities Act to make sure that transportation was on some level addressed to create a more level playing field for people with disabilities. Because we're a very, very car-centered society, and I really don't think that people very often realize how burdensome it is for people with disabilities who can't drive or access fixed-route bus systems to be able to compete and enjoy many of the same activities that people who just hop in their cars and take it for granted participate in every day without thinking.
Well, I know you often use the regular bus system, though, and yet you're eligible to use the ADA service. Why do you make that choice?
Well, I have let my eligibility lapse in the past year. As I had a couple of unfortunate experiences my last couple of times riding paratransit in Kansas City, which is Sheriff Air. The service does its best, but it's really overtaxed. It's overburdened, and it's hard for them to always be on time. And because it is a shared ride service, you might get picked up in a trip that might take you 15 minutes in a car and a half an hour on a bus. You might end up on some occasions being in the paratransit vehicle for much longer, because it's a shared ride service and they create routes that are not always the most efficient way to go. Another issue that I've experienced with paratransit is when you go to meet your friends for dinner, Janet, you can decide when you want to go and you can decide sort of at the last minute. You can get in your car and go there, but when you're reliant on a paratransit service, you have to call, at least in this town, the day before, some places weeks before, and you have to make a reservation. You have to hope that your plans don't change. Then maybe you get to the restaurant and you think that it's going to take an hour and a half to eat dinner, but maybe things go really fast and you're not having a good time with your friends and you want to leave sooner, or maybe things take a lot longer. And so you don't have the freedom of mobility that a person who drives has, or even that I feel that I have. For instance, my husband, who is also visually impaired, we met for my birthday dinner at a restaurant along the main MAX route. And so we were both able to coordinate our arrivals from work with the bus. He got there one bus earlier than I did at the restaurant, enough time for him to get one drink ahead. And and then after dinner, when we were done eating, when we decided it was time to leave, we had the flexibility to go out there and take the bus. paratransit is a really, really valuable service, and I am participating in this interview in a lot of the transit advocacy that I do through the whole person, because I would like to do everything I can to help strengthen the service.
Let me make sure I get this clear. When you ride paratransit, you have to call the day before, and this would be in all of the different groups here in town. You call and schedule, and tell me if I've got this right. If I'm riding, then I have to be available for the whole half hour around that schedule time. That a half hour before and a half hour after?
It is a half an hour. They can be 15 minutes. There's a window around your time. But just in general terms, the driver, if somehow they're late for the ride, you're still stuck waiting for the ride. However, on the other end, when the driver shows up, because of, you know, and I understand why, they have a huge complicated system. They've got, you know, a lot of vehicles, a lot of drivers, a lot of rides, a lot of other people's schedules dependent on the service. So the driver, when the driver shows up, if they are appropriately within the assigned window, they only have to wait 5 minutes, and they may leave, and you may miss your ride if, for some reason, you were held up, you couldn't get to the place, or maybe you were on the east side of the building, and they were on the west side of the building, and you missed a communication, and I had to call dispatch and say, but I'm here at the back door, I told, you know, it can be complicated.
So would you recommend to people, if at all possible, they should try and ride the regular service, and the paratransit is best for the people who really don't have another option?
Well, yes, in the best of all worlds, that would be the case. And people have differing and varying needs. There are maybe some people out there who could ride a regular bus, but they don't know how or they don't have the courage. Traffic is very frightening to a lot of people these days. If you aren't able to move very quickly in the street, if you can't see. I think we should talk a little bit about some of the training opportunities that are available now. But yes, there are, to kind of put it in a nutshell, yes, I think that it would really help the system if people who were capable of riding fixed route transportation and it was available in their area could learn to do that. That would help alleviate some of the pressure on the system. That would definitely help.
Jameson, I think that's one of the things you've been working on, isn't it? Isn't it called mobility management?
It is. And, you know, just to echo what Sheila has said, you know, it's all about providing good service that people can use and that people want to use. And we've been working on a concept called mobility management. And what that's designed to do is to look at the different modes of transportation and to look at how we're providing transportation and to make sure that we're matching needs. We're matching what we supply with the needs of our citizenry. And a couple things that we're doing now to help make our service better. And I've heard the things that Sheila has said prior, and I'm not going to disagree. You know, I think that we can do a better job making sure our routes make more sense. And we've moved to a different software package that does a much better job that we're almost 6 months into, and we're seeing much better results. We can move to what we call travel training, which is providing training to individuals who want to and can use the fixed route bus system for their trips. We provide one-on-one training, group training on how to ride the bus, how to use the fare box, what to expect, trip planning, and then also not just from the customer aspect, but to the agency, our travel trainers provide feedback on, well, here's we rode and here's what the operator did, and this was great. And here's what the operator did, and there might be an area for improvement. And here's what happened on, you know, when we tried to get to the bus stop, and we, you know, we've opened up a dialogue with Meg Conger at the city to talk about, you know, the folks who want to use the bus need to be able to get to the bus. So it's a comprehensive approach to looking at how we provide services, how people need to use the services, when they use which service, because there's a choice. There needs to be choice. And at the end of the day, it boils down to we need to provide just good, solid service that folks can bank on. and whether you need to use paratransit for some of your trips or all of your trips, or if you can use fixed route for some of your trips or all of your trips, or if you walk. You know, we need to be able to have the services in place that meet the varying needs, and mobility management takes that into consideration.
One of the things you mentioned there a little bit was technology. There's new technology out there, especially with things like smartphones, which I know not everybody has, so you can't go just to that. But what are you doing for that new technology?
I could talk for days what we've been doing. Well, I don't think we have enough time. One of the huge things that it's all how the systems run and how the trips are created and how they're scheduled and reserved is based on the algorithm, how we put schedules together. So we've moved to a better scheduling software that's more powerful, that can take into consideration how people use the trip, how people use the service, and build better templated trips. But built off of that, we're working on ways to look at next vehicle technology. So when is your vehicle going to arrive? Sheila mentioned being out in the restaurant, and essentially you're looking out the window to make sure that the vehicle arrives, because you know there's a half hour window and the vehicle will arrive and we'll wait 5 minutes. Now we did go to a policy. We have a no strand policy, so we do have a policy where if you're not at the vehicle, the dispatcher will make phone call. Okay, and if the vehicle has to leave to get someone else, they've already routed another vehicle there. So we've put something in place to try to alleviate that. But yet and still, if you're in the meeting or you're at the mall, you want to be able to enjoy the experience and not focus on your trip home. So there are some technologies out there that can trigger an alert to a smartphone or to a desktop that says, you know, your vehicle, you're the next person the vehicle's picking up, or can give you a time-based estimate on when the vehicle will be there. So we're looking at those technologies as well.
You are listening to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI 90.1 FM Community Radio. I'm Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network. You can find us at transactionkc.com. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. I'm speaking with Public Policy Specialist Sheila Styron and James Auten of KCATA. We also understand that the Regional Transit Coordinating Council, which is a new council here in town, is taking steps to coordinate and making changes to these different services, because we kind of hinted at this earlier, that there are four different services, but the eligibility requirements, the cost, when they run, all of this is really very different, and people have to either get eligible on different services or, you know, make a lot of different phone calls. So what's happening there to try and make this work better?
The Regional Coordinating Council has done a very good job of bringing this issue to light. And, you know, it's a council that's made up of ATA and Mid-America Regional and elected officials. So we have some policymakers at the table. We can talk about some things. And one of the things that they realized early was, you know, we have to make a complete integrated transportation system. And as part of that system, paratransit plays a key role. It's a very important service. So when you look at how we use paratransit now from the customer's perspective, depending on where they want to go, they may have to make several different phone calls. They may have to fill out several different applications. There's varying service hours, varying service areas, and it becomes quite confusing quickly it becomes just confusing. So what the Regional Coordinating Council has looked at is, how do we make it easier from the customer's perspective? How do we make it more effective, make it more efficient, and figure out how we can present this important service in an easier way? Because it can be confusing.
So are you talking about then all of these services having the same eligibility requirements, that someone could fill out one form and be able to ride all these different services?
We are working on that right now. We've gotten together independents, ATA, Unified Governments, Johnson County, even though they don't have ADA paratransit, they have non-ADA. So we're trying to figure out, how can we put forth a regional eligibility process where if you go through this process and you're conferred eligible for paratransit services, you're eligible for each of them. And that's something that will help not only to improve the service from the customer standpoint, but also improve coordination, open the door for further coordination from the agency side.
Well, I do have a question on how one of these works, because I know UG Transit and ATA and Indy Access, they are all ADA complementary services, and people can use them as long as they're eligible. But I'm a little interested in the way Johnson County's work. Now, one of the things people have to realize is Johnson County, the reason they don't have to comply with ADA complementary service is they don't have any fixed route service. They are designated as a commuter express service, and that's it for all of their buses. Even the one, they have two routes that run in the middle of the day, but they only have a few buses, and it doesn't change their status. So their special edition is something that they choose to do because they don't have to. And it goes through a fairly large area in Johnson County, but it's only eligible for people who live in Johnson County. So tell me if this is right. If you live in Johnson County and you are disabled and you qualify for their special edition, you would qualify then to ride the KCATA Share Fare.
No.
So you have to get eligible, right?
Right. Correct. Okay. You'd have to go through the eligibility process.
So right now we have to get eligible for both of them. If you put this new process, there'd be one eligibility in terms of both of them.
With this new process, there would be one ADA eligibility process.
Okay, so it doesn't include Johnson County.
Right, they would have to go through the ADA eligibility process. That would get them eligible in Independence and Unified Government and in ATA.
So if I'm a Johnson County resident, I could ride Special Edition, and if I go through that process, I could ride Share Fare.
Correct.
They
could apply for Share Fare right now.
Right.
They would just have to come into our service area to use it. But if they wanted to apply for Indy Access, they would have to apply for Indy Access and go into their service area to use it. Same thing with Wyandotte County. They'd have to get into their service area.
For instance, Special Edition will take people into Wyandotte. For instance, it will take them to KU Men, so they would get them into that service area. Or they'll come in this downtown area. They have a map that shows where they go. And they do cross those county borders and state borders in one case. But the opposite isn't true. If you're qualifying for ADA service in Kansas City, or even your non-ADA service, even if you get people down into Johnson County, and you do have some service that goes to Johnson County, you would still not qualify to ride Special Edition, would you?
If you're a Johnson County resident.
If you're a Kansas City resident.
Right.
Because theirs is limited to Johnson County residents only. And because it's not ADA, then you still don't qualify.
Correct.
All right. So I just want to make that clear to people that there are all these different restrictions, and even if you do fix up some of these things, that's not going to change. All right. We've got about 4 or 5 more minutes. I just wanted to make sure that we hit one more thing that's important. We're facing a huge crisis in special transportation in the next few years if we don't get our act together soon. There's like 10,000 Americans are turning 65 every day as the baby boomers hit retirement. As their transit needs increase, they could swamp the system if demand for special transit exceeds supply. Are we already struggling to keep up, and what are the plans to handle this?
You know, one of the things that has to be done is, you know, we have to get a service on the street, a list service on the street. The other piece to that is making sure that we're providing services to folks as they need them. So the eligibility process for ADA paratransit has always been designed by the ADA as a safety net for the fixed route paratransit service. So what that means is there are some folks who can use the fixed route system on some days and need paratransit on other days, or need paratransit for all of their trips, or can use fixed route for all of their trips. It's important to be able to make those distinctions so that we're putting the best service out on the street that we can. Because when it boils down to the folks who need to use the service for all or most of their trips, and we're adding additional folks who might be able to use another mode, it doesn't improve the service level. So the challenge that we have is to make sure all of the service levels for all of our modes meets the needs of our citizenry. And that's where we get back again to mobility management. And it's going to be critical as, you know, more and more people come onto the service or as demand increases, to be able to match the services to individual needs.
Okay, do you have a number for people to call if they need this service?
I do, and I have an easy deal as well. If you call into the Sheriff Air Call Center, the number is 842-9070, and if you're in the wrong place, if you're supposed to, you know, if you're asking for service that Indy Access provides, we will transfer you right to that place. So we won't have you running around through the yellow pages or through your smartphone calling different numbers.
Could you give that number again, please?
Sure, 816-842-9070.
Sheila, did you have some more that you wanted to add on this topic?
I guess I would just like to sort of emphasize, reiterate, Kansas City is a huge spread out area, and even our fixed transit is limited in where it goes. And people with disabilities and anybody who doesn't drive or who is more than transit dependent needs to have more seamless transit across all of the areas that make up this great place we all live in. I'm often known to sort of joke with people, but I'm serious actually when I say it, that, well, my life is really based on the main MAX line, because anytime I want to go somewhere, I only live a little more than a mile from Kansas, but it is really difficult for me to do anything over on that, you know, side of the border. I really feel like I'm almost in a foreign country, because, you know, the bus is so limited and paratransit connecting regionally is so limited. So what this city really needs to do is to make every effort, and I know we're working on it, and Jameson has expressed some of it well, but as somebody who's living and waiting for it to happen, we still have a long way to go before we have true connectivity and ease of use for riders who depend on it. And with the aging baby boomers and creating more and more disabilities as people age and people losing their licenses, this problem is compounding, and our region needs to get to work even faster and more energetically on these issues we all face as we age here in Kansas City.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you, Sheila Styron and Jameson Autumn, for speaking with us today about special transportation issues in the Kansas City region. I'm Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network, and you can find us at transactionkc.com. I'll be putting a lot of information with more detail about the services that are available on our website. Our next Transit Talk is October 14th. Thank you for listening.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activities in our community. If you would like more information, would like to comment, or if you or your organization would like to be interviewed or have ideas for content portions of future broadcast, call Dan Connolly at 816-217-5875. Thank you for listening to Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.